Tales of a Well-Established Lesbian.
Chapter 25. Oh, that Cyprus holiday really was a chapter all by itself. And here I was, flying home with my fiancé. It sounded so weird, and kind of great at the same time. It was a plot twist I had not been expecting. But it felt like that was that. Ashley was my person, I was hers. It was a done deal. Well, except for the small matter of an engagement ring. Clearly, it had been a spontaneous proposal. Therefore, entirely understandable that there were no rings. Right? I mean, we might have U-hauled, but neither one of us had been planning to pop any questions more serious than, what do you want for Christmas, anytime soon. So in that lovely post-proposal soppy period, we mooched around a few jewellery shops on the island, thinking it'd be lovely if we could find something while we were here. Unfortunately, I am not a well-hung lesbian. I've got tiny fingers. And it turns out that finding a ring to fit me that wasn't the girliest looking thing you've ever seen in your life was going to take a little bit of effort. I mean, no bother. No rush. After all, it's not about the ring. I mean, that's just a lovely symbol if you like that sort of thing. And I do. Guts to be honest about this. I like it. It's a part of the whole thing to me. Plus, you know, when you tell the straights, the ring is quite often the thing they want to talk about. Not to mention how surprised they were to find out that I, the butch, ergo the man, had not done the proposing. More than one person gave me the impression that they thought I might find it a little emasculating. Confirming that, yes, these people really do see me as the man in the relationship. Can't see the pride that I feel at another person wanting to share their life with me, regardless of the fact that I hadn't asked them. It just all seemed so odd to me. So when they also had to deal with me talking about choosing my engagement ring, minds were blown. I mean, how come I was getting a ring? Shouldn't Ashley be getting the ring? And I'm all like, on what grounds does Ashley get the ring? What, because she's the pretty one? Or because, you know, like men don't get the ring, and once more, that's the only role you can see me in. Stupid logic. So here's how it works in my head, right? If I am proposing, I will be providing a ring. Ideally, beforehand, but after can work too, if said proposal is spontaneous. Now, if I am being proposed to, said proposer should do the same, provide a ring. And, and if they too would like a ring as a symbol of this commitment, then we're going to go get them a ring too, right? Shove your heteronormative rules where the sun don't shine. I want a pretty engagement ring. I mean, butch pretty, of course, but I want one. We're going to be circling back to the whole ring saga a little bit later. Back in the big, wide, real world, that whole global financial crisis was happening. Not long before Ash and I had flown away for our holiday, the bank Lehman Brothers collapsed. And we all watched bankers heading for the tube with the contents of their desk in a cardboard box. Now me, I'm not about worry. Worrying about it wasn't going to change whatever was coming. So I tried to tune out the endless speculation that was rife in the office. But month by month, temps and contractors like myself were being removed from budgets. And less than 6 months after I'd been watching the bankers carry their boxes home, I carried my own out of the building. Just 6 weeks into 2009, and I was proper jobless, and new opportunities were thin on the ground. As I searched for a way to pay my bills, my mate Paul got in touch. He was managing a cocktail bar in a Mexican restaurant. He just had to sack a bartender. It was a 0 hours contract, but something, let's be honest, was better than nothing. And so, like a low budget version of cocktail, me and my best mate became work buddies, bartenders and cocktail makers extraordinaire. I mean, it wasn't ideal working evenings and weekends when your fiance works 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday to Friday. And then, of course, the added financial pressure of me not earning, or not earning as much as I did. Things were definitely not paradise. Ashley's solution to most situations was to just work harder. Now, this was all well and good, but it would inevitably lead to playing harder. I'd been seeing Ash deal with her stress via alcohol since we met. On the whole, she handled her drink pretty well. Nothing about it seemed unusual. I'd grown up seeing my parents do the same, sharing a glass of wine or two at the end of the day. Totally socially acceptable. Nothing out of the ordinary. And to be honest, even when Ash had had too much, she was a sleepy drunk, or she wandered off. You know, she wasn't a nightmare. Until she was. Now, back before Christmas, I'd gotten my first glimpse of the other side of drunk Ashley. We were off to this themed event. Think of it like a classy Moulin Rouge style sort of thing. And we are giving people a lift to the event, which means that Ashley's terrible time management is actually gonna be an issue. For a couple of reasons. I hate being late, just regardless. I certainly hate being late if I'm responsible for taking other people where they need to go. And I really, really hate feeling rushed when I've got to drive in central London. Stresses me out, right? Safe to say, I was a little wound up before we even got underway. Ash, on the other hand, Ash has had enough drinks to be carefree and happy as Larry as we drive into London. We pick up the gang and we do battle with the traffic. Ash has brought herself some travel wine, a nice heavy red wine, which she initially shared, but then finished herself. This may have had an adverse effect on her ability to navigate us to our destination. After half an hour of being like 5 minutes away, I'm sure of it, and completing my 19th three-point turn, and hoping like hell that I didn't get caught going the wrong way down a one-way street, I was ready to pull over. I was ready to abandon the vehicle and its occupants and just start walking. To anywhere. I didn't care. Ashley, opening the second bottle of wine whilst I circled a roundabout waiting for information on which exit to take, may have been the moment I lost it. And I did. I pulled over. I got out and I tried like fuck to breathe and calm down. Like woosa. While I was out of the car, it gave me a moment to get my bearings too. And I realised exactly how to get to the venue. After all, I was very familiar with this area now. I hop back in the car, I take two lefts and a right, and I get straight back out again. We are parked outside the venue. Thank God we are here. And I know I can only have one drink that night, and God knows I need it right now, as so not to murder Ashley. Now, thankfully, this is a group event. As I said, plenty of our friends are there and there's loads of other people for us to mix and mingle with. Gives us both a bit of space from each other. And it was turning into a great night. The dance floor was packed. Everybody looked fantastic. And Ashley found some good form, almost a second wind. And we were having a blast until she disappears. I'll give it 10 minutes. To allow for, you know, completely normal behaviour, like bumping into somebody you know and having a chat, or, you know, popping off to the loo without you kind of just mentioning it. But something in my gut told me something was up. So I took a casual lap of the venue, just keeping an eye out for Ashley. I popped my head into the toilets and gave a shout. Nothing. I checked the smoking area. No sign of her. I mean, let's be honest, it's easy to miss people in a venue like that, where there's all these different rooms coming off places, all that moody lighting. To be honest, we could have just been walking around in circles following each other. So I head back to my friends. But nobody's seen her for ages. And now everybody's a little concerned. So, bless them, we all split up and we all pop off to have a look for her. For some reason, I just think she's got to be in the toilet. That's where she's got to be. So I go back there. I can't get any response when I'm shouting, but one door is locked and whoever is inside it isn't saying a word. Now, lying on the ladies' toilet floor is something I like to try and avoid at all costs. But the gap on the toilet door was only at the bottom. So down I go. Good news, my friends. I have not just violated a stranger's privacy by peering under the toilet door. The bad news is Ashley is slumped, passed out in the cubicle. Safe to say, if I have got to commando crawl under a toilet door on a night out, it's over. I text the gang to call off the search, let them know I found her, and tell anyone that wants a lift home to know that we are going to be leaving just as soon as I can get Ashley conscious, upright, and moving. Now, I was not expecting this to be a quick process, and I suggested they probably had time for another drink or a dance. I wasn't wrong. Ash is red wine sleeping. Snoring too, by the way, and it takes some rousing to get her awake, but eventually she is, and now she's annoyed with me for having woken her up. She's annoyed with me because she's on the floor of a toilet. She's annoyed with me because I make her put her shoes back on. Ashley is a sullen, sulky, drunken toddler as I get her back to the car. I mean, minimal impact on the gang. They've managed to have a fun night and they are very good natured about the tension between Ash and I. I wrote it off as just one of those situations. You know, Ash had been working really hard. She's just blowing off steam. The red wine was a bad choice. Justify, justify, justify. Because it's easier than confronting it. Plus, it was probably a one-off, right? Whichever way you look at it, wages aside, Ash was quite enjoying my stint as a cocktail-making bartender. But aside from popping in every now and again to keep me company at the bar, Ashley really was all about work, trying to make up for my shortfall. Our new work schedules put a distance between us again, and we were a bit like ships in the night some weeks. With the added money worries, that wasn't helping at all. Every job rejection hit my self-esteem a little bit more. Like, Ashley's already doing so much, and I didn't want to be a burden to her, which sounds ridiculous now when I say it. And so I took my troubles, my woe-is-me moments, elsewhere. I took them to Cameron. We'd stayed in touch. I told her about the engagement and made sure I was clear about the new boundaries of our interactions. So all was good. The baller was still around, and every story that Cameron told me seemed designed to make me jealous. And I'll be honest with you, it kind of worked. I was jealous. And it's stupid because I didn't actually want Cameron, but at the same time, I didn't want the baller to have her. I mean, she sounded like such a dickhead. And clearly, obviously, I was very objective about the whole thing. So while Ash is spending more and more time at work, I am spending more and more time propping up my ego by flirting with Cameron and girls at the bar. I just had too much time on my hands. And as spring turned into summer, my hours at the bar started to dwindle. Cameron had broken up with the baller and the flirting between us had escalated all over again. I was tempted. I'd love to say that at no point the thought didn't cross my mind, but I was seriously thinking about another night with Cameron. It was a much more fun option than facing into the difficulties and distance Ashley and I were having. So Cam and I came up with a plan. We were going to throw caution to the wind and do what we pleased. But nothing happened. Now, I didn't suddenly grow a conscience or a spine. I didn't suddenly have a moral moment. Actually, Cameron did a complete 180 and shut the whole thing down. With zero explanation. 1 minute it's on like Donkey Kong, the next minute she's all like, do not contact me ever again. Okay. I mean, like, I'm confused as hell, but fine. No problem. But I can't help but wonder why. You know, maybe the baller's back. Maybe the baller never left. Maybe. Honestly, I didn't know. And I didn't give it that much thought. I was kind of relieved that it hadn't happened. I mean, it was never going to end well. And I just had a lucky escape from doing something really stupid. And so, in order to avoid my idleness leading me down a very bad path again, I decided to put myself to use. And I started hand painting t-shirts. You know, a little creative outlet. I took a notion to make some pride merchandise that wasn't covered in rainbows. And, you know, try and flog it at some pride events. Business and a bit of fun. It seemed like a good idea, you know, add to my earnings. Ashley was on board. We did Brighton Pride, but it was a bit of a washout. Rain for the weekend and wasn't ideal. But I'd also booked a stall in my hometown Pride event. Paul was willing to come along and help. And Ashley, honestly, she gave her all. And that woman could sell. All day long, she talked people out of the tops they'd chosen to put on that morning and into one of mine. She sold so many. Paul as well did a great job. You couldn't fault them. It was a ridiculously fun day. And what with it being in my hometown, my parents came out to the stall to show their support. I mean, if you'd have told me that one day my mum and dad would be at a Pride event with me and my fiancé, honestly, I think I'd still be laughing now. But there we were, smiling, and these two just being amazing parents. And then, sadly, they saw the dark side of Pride. People started flooding out of the main area, past the stalls. We were hearing talk that the event was over. A fight had broken out. Soon enough, a copper turns up, tells me it's time to shut down and pack up. It's all over. It's a shame, I think, but I don't dwell on it. I turn around to crack on with breaking everything down. Ashley, on the other hand, she wants the gossip, the tea, the details, and she presses for more info. Turns out, a fight had broken out between two groups after one man had stolen another man's cowboy hat and refused to give it back. To quote the copper, he was taunting him with the hat, so he got a slap, he did, and then it all kicked off after that. My mum and I thought it was hilarious, and my dad is, I can see him packing down the gazebo, rolling his eyes so hard. I couldn't stop laughing. All in all, it was just an amazing moment to have shared with them. I couldn't believe it. My parents at a Pride event. Who'd have thunk it? So despite the work troubles, we'd made a really good go of summer. Now, I don't know what it is about some of the women I've dated, but they seem to have this idea that I would like to be on television. I do not. And it's certainly not in the context any of these girlfriends have presented to me. Ashley, left unsupervised one day, had applied to a TV show with my details. It was a show called Super Size versus Super Skinny. So the premise of this show is to put an underweight person and an overweight person in a flat together for a week or two and make them swap diets. Not only that, but they make people stand around in the most unflattering white underwear you have ever seen to emphasise how super skinny or super sized they are. There's no prize money. There's no nothing. At best, I'd put on a few pounds. That was it. I didn't see the appeal. However, the production staff saw the appeal of me and my diet of energy drinks, cigarettes, and pizza. They were relentless. It took me all summer to get them to stop calling. It's one of those things that seems funny at the time, but actually it worked itself into me like a splinter, and it's irritated me for years. Laughing it off or making the jokes first has always been my way. Attack is the best form of defence, after all. And from being a butch to being skinny, it seems there's always a joke to be made at my expense. So you best believe I'm going to make that joke first, and I'm going to make it better than you could. But every now and again, those words, they sit with you, stained on your mind. It turned out t-shirt sales were not going to keep me in the lifestyle to which I've become accustomed. You know, one where I could afford to eat. So the job hunt continued. And I caught a break. Full-time customer service job landed through a local employment agency. Happy days. Could even walk to work. Finally, back to being a productive member of society. All seemed very normal for a day or two at the new job. Then on the third, the boyfriend of one of the girls who was working there smashed up the manager's car because he was shagging the aforementioned girl. It was madness from there on out. By the time I'd worked out how to do the job, the manager was sleeping with another girl in the office. I mean, if this was how you pass probation, I was ready to go back to the job centre. As it was, I made some sensible system and process suggestions during a visit from the client. Just basic stuff that would make us more efficient. And then after that, I had the weekend off thanks to a kinder than usual rota. I was mildly optimistic whilst getting ready for work that following Monday morning. I didn't even get my trousers on. The agency I was employed through called me to say that I wasn't required back. I wasn't fired. I just wasn't needed anymore. I pushed for a reason, and my agent said my manager had mentioned something about my audacity to make him look bad and that I had overstepped. She was as confused as I was after I'd explained that I'd made some fairly simple, quite common practice suggestions when directly asked by the client. Made no odds, I was out on my ear and I didn't have a forklift licence, so she didn't have any more jobs for me that week. She said she'd give me a call as soon as something came up. So it was back to the soul-destroying dole line for my unemployment benefits and the drudgery of job hunting and the endless nonsense of repeating the contents of your CV into teeny tiny boxes on application forms. Weeks turned into months. I took on every DIY job in the house to try and contribute somehow. Ash worked harder, she worked later, she shouldered all of the financial burden. Not working is depressing. You have all the time in the world, but no money. And everyone you want to hang out with is at work. It sucks. Days lose their meaning. A weekend holds no significance. You turn up every 2 weeks to have your job hunting efforts scrutinised by a job centre member of staff who seems to think that you're some sort of lazy son of a bitch who's happy to try and, you know, milk the system and get by on the pittance that the government gives you as a job seeker. One of my job centre advisors actually told me not to apply for a job as a parking officer once because he hated them, because they were always giving him tickets when he went to the chip shop. Just to say they were unhelpful would be a masterpiece of understatement. But honestly, the sheer level of suspicion at every step of the welfare process makes you feel shit. Like a complete leech, a burden on society, which isn't great for the ego. I was as absent in the relationship as Ashley was from the house. We just couldn't find ways to connect. But I'm not sure either of us was trying hard enough either. We were both just getting through whatever this was, however we could. Job applications aside, I'd become one with the sofa, playing PlayStation late into the night, not bothering to get showered and dressed every day. Thoroughly and utterly depressed. Which does not an attractive fiancé make. I knew Ash was fed up with me. I'd do nothing all day and then jump up half an hour before she got home to do all those jobs that she'd left on my to-do list. I was always home, always under her feet. Ashley's irritation made sense for me until one day it seemed just a little over the top. I don't know what it was that set off my suspicions, but I knew something was up. Something was off about Ashley's reaction. I'll be honest, I put it down to me overthinking. Until a few weeks later, when I saw Ashley's car parked outside a house I didn't know, on our estate, on a weekday afternoon, when she should be at work. There I was, just having a good old stretch of my legs, getting out of the house, taking in the neighbourhood, and suddenly I'm wondering what Ashley's car's doing here. Occam's razor, isn't it? The simplest explanation is usually the right one. I had more than a few hours to ponder all the other possible explanations, but you and I both know what was going on. Still, let's give Ashley a chance to explain. Maybe there is a perfectly innocent explanation that I've not considered. Listeners, there was no such explanation. Ashley was, in fact, sleeping with an acquaintance of ours, who was, at best, an off-brand version of me. At the time, I'd called her all the names under the sun. But for the purposes of this podcast, let's call this budget butch Bob. It wasn't just a one-off either. They'd been having a proper affair for a few months. Now, here's the thing about me. I can kind of understand the physical cheating. You know, I've talked about it before. I'm not going to be the only person someone fancies for the rest of their life. I get that. Mistakes get made. A one-off I'd find easier to understand, to forgive, and possibly forget. But a sustained emotional and physical affair? Pretty much like having two relationships on the go? Nope. Not cool with me. Not to mention, Bob is meant to be a friend of mine. I mean, who needs enemies with friends like Bob? The final insult, as far as I'm concerned, if you're gonna cheat on me, please do it with somebody hotter than me. Just, like, why do it otherwise? Just, come on, do it with somebody that it's worth taking the risk for. Could just be me, but that's the way I see it. I won't be shagging some ugly person. And all of this when Ashley could have just come and talked to me about the situation. Ah. But if I'm being honest about that, did I talk to Ashley when I was in that situation? I didn't. I didn't say a word about Cameron to her, did I? The only reason I wasn't in the same spot as Ashley right now was because Cameron had shut it down. Not me. Honestly, the fact that they were fucking wasn't what hurt the most. It was the fact that it had been with a so-called friend. The fact that it made me look like a fool in front of the people who'd been privy to their little tryst. I was already feeling like a completely useless individual, not able to contribute. And now, I had proof I couldn't even keep my fiancé happy with the things I could do. She's off slumming it with Bob, the bowling centre manager. How has it come to this? It didn't matter. It's clear to me that Ashley has a choice to make. It's me or Bob the basic butch. Cut it dead now and we will fix us, we'll carry on somehow. Or you pick Bob and I'll figure out where I go next. Ashley moved into the spare room while all of this played out. For a moment or two, Bob was rubbing her hands together with glee. She thought her luck was in. She thought that I'd have thrown her over, and now that it was all out in the open, she'd have Ashley all to herself. But it wasn't going to play out that way. Ashley and I talked it all through. She'd never had any intention of leaving. She needed a distraction, an outlet, somewhere else to be. You know, I'd not been there for her, she'd not been there for me. We just weren't dealing with stuff together. No teamwork to speak of. Provided Bob never made another appearance in our lives, I was all for working out and moving forward. And we agreed to take our time with it. We'd stay in separate rooms for a while. And we made more time for each other that actually mattered. You know, instead of just taking each other for granted and making no effort beyond passing the TV remote back and forth. Of course, people had opinions. People always do. Bits of the drama had gotten out. And to be fair, Bob was pretty vocal. I think trying to embarrass me into a breakup. But no one has to live with your decisions but you. And you don't have to justify them to anyone. There is no right or wrong response here. Just what feels right or best for you. And nobody else can tell you that. Nobody else can give you that answer of whether you should stay or whether you should go. But I knew I hadn't been giving my all to the relationship, and I knew I needed to be better, and I wanted us to be better together. Before long, the drama kind of quietens down and everyone else forgets about it, except for Ash and I, who are working really hard to get ourselves to a place where this doesn't happen again for either of us. Now, talking of working, I was still struggling to find anything more than a few hours here or there. It seemed that I was miraculously either underqualified or overqualified for every single job I applied for. It felt like I tried everything except walking in and demanding a job. So that's what I did next. I got suited and booted and printed armfuls of my CV. If it looked like a business, and if it had a door I could get through, I went in and I asked for a job. I hit up every business on one industrial estate and I crossed the road to try my luck at the other one. I printed something like 50 CVs and I was down to 15. And I needn't have worried. I strolled into the next business, a car hire place, and asked about a job. They had one. I asked if I could speak to the hiring manager. He came out along with the managing director. He'd heard my inquiries. He was interested. The manager offered to set up an interview. I countered with a day's trial tomorrow. Free of charge. You like me, you hire me. You don't, I go home, I never bother you again. I could see the temptation of a day of free labour was too much of a good offer for the MD to pass up on, and so he took the deal. He loaded my trial day with things to do, but true to his word, he hired me when I smashed it out of the park. More than 6 months of unemployment was over at last. The relief was immense. It does. It feels like stepping back into the real world and not a moment too soon. Yeah, another one of my cousins was getting married. And I swear I'd rather have worn a dress than tell folks I was still unemployed. Actually, I did wear a dress to that wedding and I have no idea why. I saw a photo the other day. It wasn't a good look. Combined with that whole Bieber-esque fringe, right? Complete disaster. I really should stick to suits, I thought, as the photos started popping up on Facebook. And I did. And I have. In fact, I haven't worn a dress since the summer of 2010, and I'm not sad about it at all. Hello, hello. You and I have made it through 25 chapters of my life. 25. You've listened, streamed and downloaded chapters over 5,000 times in 52 countries, and you've helped get Tales of a Well-Established Lesbian into the podcast charts in 4 different countries. I can't thank you enough for your response and your support of this podcast. If you have been enjoying yourself, please consider leaving a review if your podcast provider allows it. Mostly, this is a little shout out to you Apple Podcast listeners. Please, please, please leave a review. You can also show your support and follow me on Insta at Well Established Lesbian, and I'm on Facebook too, but we all know that's a bit rubbish. You can find me on Reddit in our own little subreddit, r/TOAWEL. You may have noticed I've given the artwork a new look. I hope you guys like it. There might be some merch coming your way soon. Maybe we'll do some giveaways and things like that. Let me know what you think via Instagram or Reddit or any other way you can manage to reach out to me. That's it for this week. Thanks, as always, for the privilege of your time. And join me next time for chapter 26.